We know that you want to build your family on the right foundation from the very start, the foundation of Jesus Christ. Concordia Publishing House offers more than 8,000 products for churches, schools, and homes, dedicated customer service, and an experienced staff to help you focus on what matters most. Click to connect at cph.org. Concordia Publishing House, listening, responding, providing for God's people. Concordia Publishing House, cph.org.
I was blessed to be raised in a churched home. My mother and father taught me that to whom much is given, much is expected.
This is why identity politics can never work. Every person at his core has one particular thing that they really identify.
He ran in 2008 as saying that he was open to all kinds of restrictions on abortion, and yet his administration never put forward any restriction on abortion of its own, and that's something that they should be held accountable for, too.
Archaeology shows that again and again. I do not know of a single discovery that shows the Bible is simply wrong.
Anglican priests in Wisconsin, surrounded by Lutherans, love issues, etc.
I have not watched it. A lot of people have said it was compelling television. Presidential press conference from President Donald Trump. I did read the transcript, though, and it's difficult transcript form to kind of catch the dynamic. There's a lot of talking over one another, and there's all sorts of, well, I read an annotated version that was produced by the Washington Post and couldn't help but clicking on their annotations. They were doing kind of a real-time fact check on the president, which is part of the press's job. It really is. It's good to see them doing their jobs for a change. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. Live this Friday afternoon, February the 17th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. We're going to be talking about two issues with Molly Ziegler-Hemingway of The Federalist, President Trump's press conference, and a Washington Post story about the arrest of illegal immigrants in several states. You might have heard about that. A little bit later, we're going to be talking with Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation. He has written recently about religious liberty and sexual orientation and gender identity laws. Are they necessary? Do they run up against religious liberty? We'll talk Gnosticism and white male privilege with Pastor Peter Burfind. Then Carol Tobias of National Right to Life will join us to talk about the House vote to overrule a rule that would have banned states from denying federal funds to abortion providers, including the big one, Planned Parenthood. Then we're going to play Issues Etc. Sound by the Week. We're going to play four sound bites for you. You listen to them, and then you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, and vote that way. Or you can vote via email, talkback@issuesetc.org, via Twitter at IssuesETC, or at our Facebook fan page, facebook.com/IssuesETC. We'll give away the LPR bundle package, and your votes will decide which will be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week in the last half hour of the program. Joining us to talk about President Trump's press conference and the deportation of illegal immigrants this week, Molly Hemingway, senior editor of The Federalist. Molly, welcome back to Issues Etc.
It's great to be here with you.
You said recently, and I quote, "I will watch a Trump press conference any time of any day." Why do you say that?
I learned this during that press conference where he called members of the media. He said that BuzzFeed was a flaming pile of garbage, and he was just kind of hitting back against various media people. That was a few weeks ago. I learned then I will never miss one of his press conferences. They are so entertaining, and they actually are informative. You mentioned that you read a transcript of the press conference. I can't, just because of the weirdness of how he speaks, I have to imagine that it's one of those things that you have to watch to truly experience and understand what he's saying, or to have a better chance of understanding what he's saying. But it was just really fascinating, informative, contextualized, frustrating. He has the same problems with being accurate or being fully accurate. But it was fun to watch him push back against this sort of overarching media narrative that had gone into hysteria.
Now, it's hard to remember. I think you've noted as well, there's a certain kind of amnesia that has descended over, well, to a lesser degree, the nation, but to a great degree, the press. You would think that Donald Trump has been president for years and years now. They can't even remember what it was like before he was president, it seems. Talk about that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, that's definitely a problem. But it's also true that they romanticized the previous president. I mean, the whole reason why we have trouble right now with the media not being taken seriously is not because they're being hard on Trump, although they are being kind of cartoonishly hard on Trump, is that they took 8 years off of their job and expect us to take them seriously now. You know, you're seeing all these stories like, oh, with Trump in office, the press is back. It's like, you know, that very admission that you weren't doing your job for 8 years is part of how Donald Trump was elected. There were numerous scandals, very serious scandals, attacks on freedom of the press, you know, spying on journalists, deleting facts from videos that were produced by the White House or various cabinet agencies. There was the IRS scandal. There was a gun running scandal. There was a scandal involving how we chose to handle things in Libya that led to the assassination of an ambassador and three other Americans. I mean, there were scandals. They just weren't covered as scandals. And so people, particularly people on the right, kind of learned that the media were not very good at doing their jobs of just telling us what was going on. And now they want to be really tough on Trump, and they're surprised every day that they're not taken very seriously. But when you think of the Obama press conference, for me, and I watched a lot of those too just because it's my job to do so, you would get, you know, 15-minute answers with hardly any information and lots of, you know, dependent clauses and diversions and, you know, there's like just lengthy droning on and on for, you know, again, literally 15 minutes, sometimes more, 20 minutes on a single question. And they would just go on and on, and they weren't that interesting or exciting to watch or listen to. This was very different. It was very responsive. Tons of reporters got to get questions in, get answers. It was just a totally different experience.
Okay, so one of the critiques that I'm hearing of this, and of course now fact checking is all the rage. It's nice to see that kind of come back after about a decade. But one of the critiques is that his accuracy level. He states something, and when you fact check it, it's kind of true, but not all the way together true. We're just dealing with the way a man thinks or the way he expresses himself.
Yeah, I mean, it is a challenge. It's frustrating. One of the things he had said yesterday was that he had won a different number of electoral votes than he actually did, you know, 306 versus 304. Then he said it was the largest margin since Reagan. That's not true by a long shot. I think he only beat the two George W. Bush elections. So everybody else had a bigger margin. And someone did push back on it, which was kind of, you know, you have to think, is this the important thing that I want to push back on if I have a chance to ask a question of the president? Well, one guy did. And it kind of ended with Trump saying, yeah, but, you know, I kind of surprised everybody by winning, and I won by much more than anybody thought I would, right? And the guy was like, well, you know, you're the president, yeah. And it's like, why couldn't you just say that? Why couldn't you say, everyone thought you were going to lose in a landslide, and instead you pulled out a victory, and not a small victory, a big victory. Like, that would be a totally true statement to say, and you would make the point. And I think he would say, and in fact he did this during the campaign, that if he spoke that way, nobody would pay attention to him. Well, I mean, this is kind of why it's a very complicated situation. There is no justification for intentionally saying something false. He said that, by the way, in the context of when he said that Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama created ISIS. And Hugh Hewitt said, why don't you just say they created the conditions that led to ISIS? And Trump said, well, if I said that, nobody would pay attention. And he's right. If he said something like that, nobody would pay attention. And the media have become professionals at discounting and dismissing and just running roughshod over any sort of right-of-center communication. That doesn't justify saying things that aren't true, but the media also need to take responsibility for what they have done to create this type of climate where the only chance people have to push back is to be sort of over the top in the opposite direction. And that leaves people who do care about objective reality and truth with, you know, we're in a hard place because we want both our media and our politicians to be truth tellers, and we're in a place where neither of them are.
Does anyone in the press get two things? Do they get Trump, and do they get why in now the nascent era of Trump, their approval and trust ratings are lower than his?
That would be no and no. Nobody in D.C. or New York seems to get Trump. And I'm speaking hyperbolically now after I was just condemning that. But so very few people understand Trump And so very few people understand why the media's credibility is so low. This is a major problem. They had every reason to fix this problem after they messed up in horrifying fashion the entire campaign. I mean, the proof that everything is messed up is that Donald Trump won. We had an entire media industrial complex telling us that Donald Trump was going to lose in a landslide. That was a consistent narrative throughout the entire campaign. The actual issues that the electorate cared about, the electorate that elected him cared about, were ignored or dismissed or not covered well by our media. The things that didn't matter were covered exclusively, and they should have known to fix it. They should have known to stop pushing narratives and to report facts, to stop being so hysterically opposed to him, to actually learn and meet a single Trump voter and get them to talk to you. I mean, simple things. There are also really complex things that need to happen, like hiring people who don't all think the same, who come from the same schools and have the same ideas about how the world should be. They haven't even begun to think about that type of thing, to the point that I worry that they never will. And of course, we do need a strong media to hold the powerful accountable. That's a major and important check on our system. And we don't have that capability because the media not only don't have any credibility, they're decades behind in coming to terms with the seriousness of the problem, and they seem to have no intention of fixing it.
They also seem, and this is just my personal observation, correct me if I'm wrong, they seem intent, at least at this point, what 3 weeks in, something like that, with discovering some backbreaking final straw kind of a scandal or corruption. They know it's there. It's got to be there. And every news story coming out of the White House has to be it. Am I just seeing that for myself?
I mean, that to me is exactly the tenor and tone of the coverage. Everything is spun to be apocalyptic, even minor things. I mean, the Associated Press had a story that they totally botched, but they sold it as basically the Trump administration is coming with federal agents to round up anyone who's in the country without the best paperwork possible. By the end of the day, the story turned out to be like, some, you know, flunky at some far-flung agency had drafted a memo that never was even seen by the cabinet secretary about maybe using, like maybe offering help to state governors to enforce federal laws governing criminals who are in the country illegally. You know, it's just like totally different story, and I'm not even sure if I have that right because the story keeps changing as more is known about it. But you can't spin normal behavior and totally reasonable policy proposals as the second coming of the worst government in history and do it day after day after day and expect people to pay attention to you. Something bad could happen, and I don't know if anybody would actually believe it outside of Washington and D.C. and liberal enclaves, because everything has turned out to be not true that we keep being told is the worst thing ever.
So why are they doing it? This is my personal explanation. They are convinced that he is a crypto fascist and that sooner or later they're going to catch him at it. And that's my kind of extreme read on the media here. It's got to be there.
Well, their rhetoric was so unhinged throughout the campaign that they can accept two possibilities. One is that they got things wrong. They don't understand the American people and they don't understand Trump's appeal. Or two, they're right. They're the saviors of the world. Everybody else has been deluded and it's their job to bring him down for the sake of the world peace. And so it seems like they're going further into their rather extreme interpretation of things. And I just, you know, I guess it's technically possible that they're right and everybody else is deluded, but I'm having a really hard time seeing that they have shown themselves to be capable of making good determinations about who's a responsible leader and who is not. And so I don't think they're well positioned to make this case, and they're just further alienating themselves from the American people.
Case in point, you have compared and contrasted coverage of the recent deportation took place over the weekend of illegal immigrants, some of them criminals, some of them not. And you actually point out that this technically isn't something that, although it happened during his administration, isn't something that started during his administration.
Well, it's a great example of how Trump and the media feed off of each other and they sort of benefit from each other. Both Trump and the media made this claim that totally routine roundups of people who are breaking laws in the United States and are here illegally was something that was new and worrisome under Trump. I mean, Trump didn't say it was worrisome, but he said it was his own efforts that were leading to this crackdown. In fact, and President Obama didn't get too much coverage about this, but he routinely did these kinds of operations. His administration did these kinds of operations where people would be rounded up if they were, if the governments understood that they were breaking the law and were in the country illegally, had deportation orders, they would go find the people and actually deport them. And the news coverage, like the Washington Post, said, this is new, this is all because of Trump's crackdown, and in under Trump, they're actually rounding up family members, which the Obama administration didn't try to do. We just go back to stories from last year, or you know, a couple years ago, you can see that families were routinely swept up in these operations, as is understandable and exactly what you'd expect in such a thing, because people do are in families, you know. And you didn't hear this freak out under Obama. I mean, you heard it maybe in the Hispanic press, but you didn't hear it in the mainstream press. And then you hear this freak out with Trump. Things that both Obama and Trump did will be portrayed completely differently based on which person is doing it. And that is, again, why people have a hard time taking the media seriously, because there are all sorts of ways you can tell a story. I mean, Trump made this point in the press conference that he was saying the leaks are real, the stories are not. And all these media people said, well, how can that be? How can the leaks be real but the stories not be true? It's easy. You can do a selective leak operation. You can push a narrative that's completely false, where you cherry-pick information to make things look one way when really they're another, and yet the leaks can still be real leaks. I mean, if you can't figure that out, you shouldn't be a member of the journalism profession. And if you're too stupid to be skeptical of what is so obviously an orchestrated leak campaign, if you're not skeptical of the motives or trying to ascertain what the motives are or why we're all seeing these stories come out that always seem to fall apart, you know, we keep falling for them. I'm sort of mortified. Like, President Trump can say that the media are discredited, and it's not him saying it that makes us discredited, it's what we have done to ourselves. And it's not going to change until the media take responsibility for what we've done and try and rebuild that credibility. I don't even think people want to, because we're making so much money right now that nobody sees the larger need for the future health of the industry.
Molly Ziegler-Hemingway is senior editor for The Federalist. You can follow her on Twitter, MZ Hemingway, at MZ Hemingway. And be sure to subscribe to receive the daily email updates from The Federalist. You'll find a link under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Molly, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Ryan Anderson joins us on the other side of the break. We're going to be talking about religious liberty and sexual orientation and gender identity laws. Are sexual orientation and gender identity laws, SOGI laws, are they necessary? If they were necessary, what would need to be demonstrated in order for them to be legitimate? And how do they bump up against religious liberty? We'll discuss all of that with Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation after this.
Emily finally had to face the truth. Her church choir was a mess.
Katie Schuerman from her new audiobook, House of Living Stones.
Sure, they'd managed to turn out a few decent choral offerings for Sunday worship every now and then, but their confidence and morale were presently hanging lower than pants on a wrapper.
You can purchase and download an audio version of the novel House of Living Stones at Amazon, Audible, and iTunes. House of Living Stones by Katie Schuerman.
Are you tired of working nights, weekends, and odd hours trying to cover your bases at home just to make ends meet? At the Cleaning Authority, we call that the multi-job shuffle, and we want to end that for you right now. We'll train you in our proven, efficient cleaning methods, and you'll be partnered to work in pre-qualified homes. Call 314-416-8117 and walk away from the multi-job shuffle with a future in our St. Louis office, 314-416-8117.
Often imitated, never equaled. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page. or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
This is a message for members of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans. Thrivent Financial has a charitable grant program called Thrivent Choice. Thrivent Choice allows you to designate charitable outreach funds to Lutheran Public Radio. For more information, look for the Thrivent logo under the Donate page of our website, issuesetc.org, or ask your Thrivent representative about Thrivent Choice. Help support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. with Thrivent Choice.